Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A terrific Tuesday to you. It's July the 19th, 2022. So happy to be talking to you, my friends. It's going to be a great, great show today. The Cale Clark Show. Toll-free line to call in, 888-914-9149. Once again, that number, it's free to you. Comes out of producer Jim's salary, 1-888-914-9149. You can also email the show if you are so inclined. Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com is the address. Show ideas are welcome. Questions that you might have, we'll try to answer them. And you can follow me on Twitter also at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And the show account is at Cale Clark Show. Or the Cake Clark Show, as it's sometimes, as you might have heard that little promo that, producer Jim made. And I think the cake would be melting in the heat today. It is blazing hot. I'm glad I'm in my musty basement studio here in Toronto because it's well over 90 degrees outside. It feels like it's in the 40s in Celsius. We operate by the metric system. So for those of you that want to do the conversion, go for it. Yeah, and I know it's hot in Chicago. Producer Jim is sweating it out there. But we're going to try to have a cool show for you today. And the title of this little segment, this is something I've been wanting to do for a long time. It's something that always has intrigued me. And the title of this segment is the Zodiac Killer to Your Faith? A little pun there. I worked really hard on that one. Do you guys remember the Zodiac Killer? There was even a movie about that called Zodiac that came out a while ago. It was a serial killer in the 1960s in California. Obviously, very tragic, very evil. I'm also a bit of a serial killer. I literally just had a bowl of Cheerios before the show. That was my dinner. I'm not making that up. And the reason why I ate those Cheerios, just so I could use that joke. So, I don't know. Producer Jim, we need a laugh track on the show of some sort. Just so I can hear some kind of feedback.
I ran across a laughing baby that was just hysterical the other day, and I just didn't have it loaded. So I'll have to get that up there.
Load it up, man. We need the laughing baby. But anyway, so what am I talking about? Now, I know that some of you guys here are into reading your horoscope, and you know that you shouldn't do it as Catholics, and there's good reason for that, but you can't bring yourself to resist it, whether it's in the newspaper or you want to check it out. You just want to, this is a bad idea because it's really incompatible with faith, and we'll be sharing with you why in just a little bit. But one thing that I always want to share with you, amazing discoveries about the biblical world, and this is one that I've been reading about for years, and I think I finally got a handle on what it all means. In ancient synagogues in Galilee, they found zodiacs on the floors of the synagogues. This is wild. Astrological signs, the horoscope, Cancer, Libra, Gemini, they're all there. And what in the world is this doing in a place of worship? Does this mean that the people of God just kind of gave into paganism? Is this something that Jesus was upset about? Well, I want to tell you about this. This is actually a pretty wild story, uncovering a mystery. And it all starts in the 20th century, in the early part of the 20th century, in a place called the Valley of Jezreel. Now, if you know your Bible, you know that this is mentioned, of course, in the Old Testament. In Judges chapter 7, this is where Gideon, the famous Gideon, gathered his men there. Now, these are soldiers, and he was kind of trying to weed out the good soldiers from the bad. And this happened in the Valley of Jezreel. Now, in the Valley of Jezreel, there's this spring that rises up called Ein Herod. It has nothing to do with King Herod. It's spelled differently. E-I-N-H-A-R-O-D, Ein Herod. That's the name of the spring. And this spring kind of makes its way east, towards the east, down the valley, and it goes for about 18 kilometers or so. And it goes all the way through a place called Beth She'an, and that's a really famous place in Israel, Beth She'an. And by the way, anytime you read something with Beth in it, in the Bible, Beth means house. That's why Bethlehem, it literally means the house of bread. So Jesus becomes, of course, for us the bread of life in the Eucharist. He's the living bread of life. So very poetic and very apropos that Jesus was born in Bethlehem, the house of bread. So Beth means house. So if ever you, I don't know, you meet a young lady named Beth that you want to impress, just say, hey, Beth, you are like a house to me. You're built like a house. Maybe you shouldn't say that. But anyways, that's what it means. Beth means house. And so what happened was this spring that sort of bubbles up in the Valley of Jezreel kind of goes from the foot of Mount Gilboa all the way down east towards, you know, through the valley, passes through Beth Shean and empties out into the Jordan River. Well, this is an incredible story. By the way, in Biblical Archaeology Review, there's a guy by the name of Walter Zanger who wrote a piece about this, and I learned so much from it. I want to share what I learned with you guys. Basically, what happened was this place was neglected for about 1,000 years, over a millennium. And what happened was because the valley had a bunch of blocked up waterways and there was a lot of silt, it basically became this huge marshy swamp. And people tried to inhabit that place in the 1920s, in the late 1920s, but they literally had to drain the swamp before the swamps aren't just in Washington, D.C., folks. They had to drain the swamp in the Holy Land in order to make it habitable, in order to make it usable farmland. So this was a really, really big problem. So in 1928, a bunch of settlers and a work crew started to deal with the swamp. They tried to dig a drainage canal in the Valley of Jezreel. And one of the workers, as they were digging, this person's shovel hit something. I was like, what the heck is this? Something solid. And it turned out to be pieces of a mosaic floor. And immediately all the work stopped. And this is what happens in the Holy Land, because if you go to the Holy Land, maybe you're going on the trip with Drew Mariani that's happening soon through Relevant Radio, and I've taken many groups to the Holy Land. Maybe one day I'll get to go with you as well. When you go to the Holy Land, almost every square inch of this place has some sort of a backstory to it, and there is so much incredible archaeology there and so many great finds that actually a lot of the stuff that's there, we'll never find it because houses have been built there. You're not going to displace people to look for something historic. But very often when there's a new construction project that's going on in Israel, in the Holy Land, 9 times out of 10, as they're digging the foundation of a building or something like that, they're going to hit something. And it's probably historic. So what happens in that case is that all the work by law has to stop immediately. And then the IAA gets called in. That's the Israel Antiquities Authority. And they check it out and they see if it's worthwhile, if this is something really historic, if this is something that's a biblical find. And if it is, the construction project ain't happening until they are done excavating the project. And sometimes they never get to build what they were going to build. And I remember seeing last time I was in Israel, there was an apartment complex. And as they were digging the foundation, they found this historic site. And they actually had to build around it in the middle of this. It's kind of like in the courtyard of these two buildings. They built this bubble, and underneath the bubble is this historical site. I think it was an ancient graveyard or something like that. So they had to actually change the architecture to fit the land. But anyways, this is exactly what happened in December of 1928. Well, they stopped digging this channel to drain the swamp. They called in Hebrew University archaeologists and two guys by the name of Eliezer Sukenik and Naaman Avigod came in, very famous archaeologists, and they began to excavate this place. They started their work on January the 9th, 1929, and they kept going for 7 weeks despite really heavy rains. Now, usually in the valley, they get a lot of rainwater. They got massive amounts of rain that particular year, way more than usual. But despite all this, they found what they were looking for, and that mosaic that worker found with his shovel, they figured out that there was an absolutely astonishing, complete floor. It turned out to be, I'll just spoil it for you, it was a synagogue. It was an ancient synagogue, and they found the mosaic tile floor, and it was completely preserved. It was over 1,000 years, well over a millennium old well over 1,000 years old, perfectly preserved. And what had happened was there was an earthquake that happened right after they built the synagogue. And the synagogue was built in the 6th century. It was about, I think, 520 AD. It was in the church age. And there was an earthquake that happened right after the synagogue was built. And the plaster roof of the synagogue fell directly onto the floor and covered it up. And then all these rocks and debris fell on top of it. So the fact that the floor was covered by the ceiling that fell on it, that perfectly preserved it through the centuries. And what they found was unbelievable. There were three beautiful panels that were made, these mosaics on the floor of the synagogue. And the middle one, and by the way, if you go onto Twitter, if you're a Twitter user, I posted a picture of this on my Twitter feed at Cale Clark. You can follow me there, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. I was kind of promoting this show, and I posted an image of the main panel that they found on the floor of the synagogue. It's unbelievable. So this was really weird. This is the strangest thing that anybody had ever seen in a synagogue, because it was a square image, and at four corners of this image, there were depictions of women. And the women represented the seasons of the year, the four seasons of the year. Now, inside that square was a circle. And it was actually a wheel. Just picture the wheel of your car, right? There's a hubcap in the middle, there's a hub in the middle, and then there's spokes going out, or maybe a bicycle wheel. So there's a hub in the middle, a circular image in the middle, and then there were 12 kind of spokes going out from the middle, and it formed a wheel. And in each of the, there's 12 images around the main hub in the middle. And those images, there were 12 images of the zodiac, the signs of the zodiac, the horoscope. Can you imagine? So you've got Cancer, you've got Libra, you've got Gemini, you've got Aquarius, you've got all the signs of the zodiac. And in the middle, there's an image of a man driving a four-horse chariot. And that's called a quadriga, by the way, a four-horse chariot. And he's driving this chariot through the moon and the stars. Rays of sun are coming out of his head. Who is it? It's the pagan god Helios, the sun god. Now, what on earth is this doing in a Jewish synagogue? Why would the people of God put a pagan image of the zodiac right there on the floor of their synagogue? What's going on here? Well, hang on, they thought. Well, maybe there's something more than meets the eye. It seems totally pagan. This seems wrong. But then they kept digging, and they found more images, more mosaic tile on this floor of this ancient synagogue in Galilee. They found images of the Ark of the Covenant. They found images of eternal light. The menorah, you know, the seven-branched candelabra that was, of course, in the temple. Palm fronds. And also an image of a shovel that was used for shoveling incense, you know, burning incense at the temple. Huh. Then they found another image. And this one is from the Bible. This one is one that everyone knows. It's Genesis chapter 22, the sacrifice of Isaac by his father Abraham. And just in case people have maybe forgotten the biblical story, they had you covered, because in the synagogue, there are these images of all the characters, all the people involved, and the names are spelled out over their heads. So there's the ram, and it actually says the ram. And there's that. That's, of course, you know, Abraham is going to sacrifice his son. God stops him. And then God provides a ram. Its horns are caught in a thicket, caught in the thorn bush. Hey, you can sacrifice this ram. Don't sacrifice your son. Don't touch him. So it actually has a servant standing there with a donkey. There's Abraham. There's Isaac. And then the hand of God is coming out of the clouds. And the words, you know, do not put forth your hand against the boy. You can read that in the tile on the synagogue floor. This is wild. And by the way, all these images, you can find them on Google image search. And I'll tell you what the name of this synagogue is in just a little bit. But essentially, it was a synagogue. We know this. It dated to 520 AD. So it's called, by the way, Beth Alpha. Beth Alpha, the House of Alpha. So check it out. And there were, by the way, there were six other synagogues in the region in Galilee that also had the pagan zodiac on the floor of the synagogue. Now, what in the world is happening here? So what in heaven? Depictions of the heaven. Now, we know that the zodiac astrology, it's all about the stars, constellations, and all that stuff. What's up in the heavens? Well, what in heaven's name were these guys doing? Don't they know the commandment? And of course, in Exodus chapter 20, it's one of the places where you can find the Ten Commandments in the Bible. It says this, you shall not make for yourself a graven image or any likeness of what is in the heavens above or on the earth below or in the waters under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them. That's in Exodus chapter 20. You're listening to the K.O. Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149 is the number to call if you want to react to this. If you have any questions about this, I'll try to answer them. I'm talking about this discovery in ancient synagogues, seven ancient synagogues in the region of Galilee, pagan symbols of the zodiac of all things. The pagan sun god Helios. What does this mean? So, okay, if Exodus says don't make any images of what's in the heavens or anything like that, don't bow down to them or serve them. By the way, this is you might know this. This is kind of a sidebar topic here, but I don't want to get too deep into the woods here. But Protestants and Catholics have two different sets of the Ten Commandments. I don't know if you know this, but the Catholic arrangement of the Ten Commandments differs from the Protestant one. And it, obviously in both sets, the first commandment is the same. I am the Lord your God. You shall have no other gods but me. I'm the one true living God. But in the Protestant list, commandment number two is do not make any graven images. And it comes from this verse, these couple of verses I just read to you, Exodus chapter 20, verses 4 and 5. Now, some people want to say, well, Catholics took out the second commandment. It's not in their list because they love graven images, images of angels, images of God, images of Jesus, images of Mary, and they worship the images. Well, look, and we have a lot of non-Catholic listeners to the show, and I appreciate each and every one of you, and you guys know that most Protestants even would say, that's ridiculous. Don't accuse Catholics of idolatry. They know full well, they're not worshiping the statues, okay? Now that's really what the problem is here. And by the way, this the second commandment, the reason why it's not included in the Catholic list is basically it's an extension of the first commandment. It's an extension of the prohibition against idolatry. You can only worship the one true and living God. If you worship anything that's in creation, then that's a false god. That's an idol. That's a grave sin. And so this is actually an extension of that, because if you read it carefully, it says, don't make a graven image. You shall not bow down to them or serve them. Or serve them. Now, if we Catholics have a statue of Jesus or an image of Jesus, now, if someone were to actually worship the statue, that is a problem. That would be idolatry. But it's a representation. It's an image of the person that we do worship, which is Jesus Christ, God the Son. It's a little bit like family photos. Nobody thinks that their family photo is actually that person. It's just an image of that person to remind you of them, make you think about them. But we're actually only worshiping God. We don't worship Our Lady. She's a creature. Okay, we honor her. That's a different story. But this whole thing about having images, and there was this iconoclastic movement in church history that sought to get rid of all images. But really, images have always been a part of biblical worship, even going back to the time of the Jews. And in fact, there are many, many times in the Old Testament where God specifically commands images to be made with reference to worship. Probably the best example of this that I can think of is the Ark of the Covenant itself, because there were these two angels, the cherubim, carved on the lid of the Ark that God commanded them to be carved. These images. And there were all kinds of things in the temple, images that God commanded to be carved and to be made in his temple. And actually, if you read this in Hebrew, apparently it comes across a little bit different, these verses from Exodus, because in the original Hebrew, there are no vowels, there are no punctuation marks. So it could be read like this. It could be read as, make no graven images which you worship. So that's the problem. It's worshiping the images. It's worshiping an idol. That would be a grave sin. So it's not the making of images that's the problem. So hopefully that's as clear as mud. But the bigger problem here is, why in the world are there pagan zodiacs on the floor of a synagogue? And what on earth does this mean? Should you, as a Catholic, or if you're a Christian of another persuasion who might be listening, or maybe just another interested party wondering, what does the church have to say about this? The church does have something to say about this. We're going to explain it all after the break. 888-914-9149. You're listening to The K.O. Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Be right back. Hi, this is K.O. Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. The Relevant Radio studio line is sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters Flexible Premium Life Insurance. For less than $12 a month, a 40-year-old can get $500,000 of coverage. Go to relevantradio.com/forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the K.O. Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, welcome back to the program. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Playing a little Coldplay for you on the way in. Sky Full of Stars, and Jim played Star Trek on the outro. So, hey, a lot of people look to the stars for guidance. They look to astrologers, palm readers, all kinds of things. Not cool. Not cool. It's pagan in origin. Shouldn't get involved with this, and I'll tell you why in just a second. But what we're talking about today on the show is the discovery in Galilee of ancient pagan zodiacs in synagogues, in places of worship for the people of God. What on earth is going on? Why are they there? So now, this wasn't all over the place. This is only in the Galilee, in these seven synagogues where they found them. What are they doing there? Now, when you look at, and by the way, I read a piece about this by Walter Zanger in Biblical Archaeology Review magazine, which really shed a lot of light on this. And essentially, the zodiac is paganism personified, right? Like, and people are into this. Maybe you've struggled with this at some point in your life, reading your horoscope. It's based on the assumption that the stars, the constellations, control not only what goes on Earth, but your destiny, your fate, if you will. What happens here is a direct result of what's going on in the sky. So if you know when you were born, you know your birthday, you know what your sign is, then you can figure out what you're like under this mindset, what's worth doing, what you should avoid, what's wise. Everything is fixed and determined. There's no value. There's no concept of free will, repentance necessarily. It's just the universe is a machine. The cosmos is a mechanism, and we are at its mercy. Now, this is absolutely counter to the biblical worldview. And Jews and Christians alike detested this with a passion. Now, one thing you should know, by the way, you might be wondering, okay, well, these are synagogues. Has this ever happened in a church? Well, the early church absolutely prohibited zodiacs. And in fact, there are all kinds of quotations I could give you from the church fathers about this. And there is actually not one zodiac image in a Christian church before the Middle Ages. And even after that, it's like really scattered. Only a few of them have ever been found. So this is absolutely the enemy of biblical religion. Let me just tell you what the modern catechism of the Catholic Church says about this. And this is paragraph number 2116 in the catechism, 2116. It says, all forms of divination are to be rejected. And this is kind of a divination, like trying to figure out, discern what the future is. So all forms of divination are to be rejected. Recourse to Satan or demons, conjuring up the dead, or other practices falsely supposed to unveil the future. Now, let me just stop there for 1 second. When Catholics ask for the intercession of the saints, a lot of people think this is what we're doing. And this is a sin. This is called necromancy. This is consulting the dead to try to figure out what the future is. This is has nothing to do with the Catholic practice of intercession of the saints, okay? We're not consulting the saints to tell me the future. You know, what does the crystal ball say? No, no, no. We're asking them to pray for us. We're leaving the will of God in play here, of course. We're asking them to pray for us. We're not consulting the future. That's not what it's about at all. That's a pagan practice, necromancy, consulting the dead, the spirits of the dead. That's prohibited by the faith, and even says so in the catechism. So it's clearly not the same thing that we're doing. All right, so this paragraph 2116 in the catechism goes on to say, consulting horoscopes, astrology, palm reading, interpretation of omens and lots, the phenomena of clairvoyance, and recourse to mediums all conceal a desire for power over time, history, and in the last analysis, other human beings, as well as a wish to conciliate hidden powers. They contradict the honor, respect, and loving fear that we owe to God alone. End of quote. So really, at the end of all this, it's a desire for control. It's a desire. It's really a desire to arrogate the power of God unto yourself. And this is the original temptation, right? Eat the fruit, you'll be like God. So only God is God. We are not. We are creatures. We depend on Him for everything. And so this is a big deal in the ancient world. Pagans always believed that the stars, in fact, were divine. Aside from, you know, Helios, you know, that's one of the pagan sun names for the sun god. Also Apollo, you might have heard of Apollo, the sun god. Diana, the moon goddess. Planets were all named after quote-unquote gods, small g gods, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Saturn, Jupiter, for example. Now, in the Old Testament, there are actually a lot of verses that say, do not worship the stars or the planets. It actually specifically says that. There are all kinds of them that are listed in the Old Testament. But in the New Testament also, in the New Testament time period, this concept of fate was something that pagans were into, and people are still into it today. And this reading of the stars, trying to figure this out. The New Age movement is kind of associated with this as well. And I remember there was a document, a really good document that was put out by the Vatican years ago. It was something about Jesus Christ. I think it was called Jesus Christ, the Bearer of the Water of Life. Yeah, that's what it was called. It was all about the New Age movement because of the age of Aquarius, right? Well, Aquarius is the water bearer. Jesus really gives us the water of life. So it was a great, great response to the New Age movement. And the early church, just like Jews who are properly formed in their faith, they were absolutely opposed to all this stuff. They even said, really, this comes ultimately from the devil himself. It's demonic in origin. And the early church actually would excommunicate people who were into this. There is a mathematician named Aquila Ponticus, a very famous guy. In the year AD 120, he was excommunicated from the Church of Rome for heresies with respect to astrology. And all the church fathers, I'm just going to read you one little quote here. And this is from one of the early church figures. There's so many quotes I could read to you from Augustine and a whole bunch of other people. Tatian the Syrian, he said this, under the influence of demons, men form the material of their apostasy. So basically, he said, basically all false teaching has its origin in demons, ultimately. Well, the devil is the father of lies, Jesus said, right, in the Gospel of John. So Tatian goes on to say, for having shown them a plan of the position of the stars, like dice players, they introduce fate a flagrant injustice. For the judge and the judged are made so by fate, the murderers and the murdered, the wealthy and the needy, all are the offspring of the same fate. And he said in another place, such are the demons. These are they who laid down the doctrine of fate. So this is really interesting. So he's basically saying this whole idea that who you are, what you've got, your skills, blah, 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 your lot in life, that's all handed to you by fate. And he says basically demons are behind that idea. That's really interesting. Tatian the Syrian goes on to say, their fundamental principle was the placing of animals in the heavens as constellations. These they dignified with celestial honor in order that they might themselves be thought to remain in heaven, and by placing the constellations there, might make to appear rational the irrational course of life on earth. Thus the high-spirited and he who is crushed with toil, the temperate and the intemperate, the indigent and the wealthy, are what they are simply from the controllers of their nativity. In other words, the astrological sign under which they were born, that controls their whole fate. This is astrology at its finest, or at its worst, rather. For the delineation of the zodiacal circle is the work of the quote-unquote gods, small g gods. But we are superior to fate, and instead of wandering demons, we have learned to know one Lord who wanders not, end of quote. So that's Tatian the Syrian. There's a really nice, I'll send this to producer Jim. There's a link on the Catholic.com website listing all kinds of quotations like this from the church fathers condemning astrology, condemning the zodiac and all that stuff. So this has been around for quite some time. And again, the question is, why is this stuff showing up in a synagogue? This seems like a major conflict of interest here. So what's going on here? What's going on here? Well, it's not what you think. It's not what you think. And there are some people who try to suggest that later on the rabbis were kind of okay with this sort of idea. There's even a midrash, and that's sort of a commentary by the rabbis that talks about the zodiac and tries to say it's kind of okay. And this midrash of the rabbi says, the Holy One, blessed be He, said to Abraham, just as the zodiac surrounds me and my glory is in the center, so shall your descendants multiply and camp under many flags with my Shekinah, that's the Shekinah glory of God, in the center. Well, that comes from a midrash from one of the rabbis. There's a little commentary by one of the rabbis, but this is kind of special pleading, I think, in a lot of ways. So what's interesting, too, is when you look at these synagogues and the zodiacs that were there, they're not done right. They're not done right. They're not done correctly. For example, it's got these four women in the corner, these images of women which represent the four seasons. But the seasons are in the wrong spots. And so you've got the zodiac sign of Cancer, which is the crab, in early spring, but it's actually in the actual zodiac, it's in midsummer. Libra, you know, the one with the scales, scales of justice or whatever, the scales of Libra. So in this synagogue mosaic, it's actually between the spring and summer seasons, but in real life, well, it's not real life, but you know what I'm talking about. It actually is supposed to be in the fall. So it's really bad. It's done badly. If they're trying to do a real zodiac, they didn't do it right. So according to Walter Zanger, look, either this guy really doesn't know about the zodiac, or maybe, because he is Jewish, he does worship the one true God, he doesn't actually care about this. He doesn't care about getting it right. It's there for another reason. So some people say, well, maybe it's supposed to be a calendar. Maybe it's supposed to be a calendar. But again, it can't be a calendar because they messed up the seasons. Well, maybe it's just they like the pictures. They like the zodiac is out there. It's in the culture. They like the images. Hey, let's put a zodiac here. I really like the crab. It looks cool. Let's do that. No. That's not why it's there either. So what in the world is it there for? Of all the things they could have done, why do they pick the zodiac, and why is it only in these synagogues in Galilee? By the way, like I said, there are six more of these synagogues. One of them is in Tiberias, One of them is an Ein Gedi. That one's kind of weird because there's no images. It's all just done in text, which is kind of interesting in its own right. There's another one that they found, and this one is not as in good. It's actually quite, it's gorgeous. Another mosaic synagogue floor with all kinds of imagery on it. They found it in a place called Zippori, and its English name is Sepphoris. Sepphoris. Now, next week, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about Sepphoris because we're going to celebrate the feast day of the grandparents of Jesus, the parents of the Blessed Virgin Mary. I'm going to do a Miracles, Mysteries, and Mary segment on this. It's their feast day, St. Joachim and St. Anne. They were from, according to church tradition, they were from the city of Sepphoris. So this might have been their synagogue. This was found in 1993, the Sepphoris Synagogue, and they also have a zodiac there. It's very elaborate, but it's in bad shape. It's in bad shape because the one they found in the Valley of Jezreel, the Beth Alpha Synagogue, again, because of the earthquake, the ceiling fell right on top of the floor. It preserved it perfectly. Not the case in Sepphoris. But that one's also interesting as well. But what is really going on here? Why are they there? Well, I think there's something we can say about this. There is something that we can say that will make sense. Why in the world would there be a synagogue where there's images of the zodiac, the four seasons, but also some biblical stuff as well? The righteous ancestors of the Old Testament, Abraham. Why is there an Ark of the Covenant? It's always there also on the floor of the synagogue. Well, they're not just decorations. They're not just fun pictures. They're not bad attempts at putting a calendar on the floor. Nope. What is going on here? Well, Walter Zanger thinks that this was a mystical Jewish tradition that kind of got, that was really popular in the region, but it never really took off. It kind of got buried, just like the synagogue got buried with the earthquake. Because remember, after the temple in Jerusalem was destroyed in the year 70 AD, it caused a big crisis in the Jewish world. Okay, we don't have a temple. We can't make sacrifices there. What are we going to do? And eventually the system of the rabbis began to develop, which is still in existence today. This tradition of the Talmud. But there was another tradition, and it kind of got lost to the sands of time. And Walter Zanger thinks this was kind of a mystical Jewish tradition. And it was kind of going in a different direction. And so if the rabbis said, okay, man walks down a path, God gives him the law, tells him what to do, what not to do, how to stay on the straight and narrow. God's happy when we obey him. He's not so happy when we don't. That's kind of the way the rabbis looked at it. But there's another way. There's another kind of look at this. And if that was kind of a horizontal view where you're walking down this road, he calls it a vertical view. Because all pagans, speaking of the pagans here, people have always known from the beginning of time that they're not in ultimate control, that there are other powers at work, higher powers, you could say. And even ancient peoples knew, okay, nature is part of the game here. It rains, it waters the seeds grow. There's the sun, there's the moon, there's the wind, there's the fire, there are the elements. And in fact, ancient peoples, this is kind of all they knew. So what did they were very tempted to, and they weren't just tempted, they went ahead and did it. They made these natural elements into gods and began to worship them. You know, the fire god, the sun god, whatever. So ancient peoples would sacrifice to Mother Earth. They will worship the moon god. They will worship the sun, Helios, right? But that's not reality. That's not really what's going on here. There is a true and living God who created all of these things. Now, when the Greeks came along with philosophy and the beginnings of science, they're like, okay, well, we know that there's cycles. You know, there's in nature, there's cyclical seasons, rebirth in nature, that sort of thing. Let's try to figure out how this all works. Plato, the philosophers, tried to organize all these things into a hierarchy and kind of created this spiritual ladder, if you will, with God, the first, the uncaused cause being at the very top. And so really, this is what Walter Zanger suggests what was going on here in these synagogues. What's going on here is that that these images of the righteous ancestors like Abraham and their example of faith. And then there's this mosaic of the zodiac, but it wasn't for pagan purposes. They were kind of looking at seasons, looking at the earth, and understanding that, okay, the stars, the constellations, yeah, they are there, but there's something beyond the stars. There's something, someone beyond the cosmos who created the sun. And it's interesting because at the center of the zodiac, there's the sun god Helios. He's got this chariot with four horses. Ah, but if you look at the book of Ezekiel, Ezekiel chapter 1, there is God's chariot throne. God's chariot throne. This is why Jesus says, by the way, when he's on trial for his life before the high priest, he says, I am the Messiah, and you will see the Son of Man, in other words, me, coming with the clouds of heaven, seated at the right hand of the power, the right hand of the Father. Well, how can he be seated and yet you're moving? You're coming with the clouds of heaven. The answer is God's chariot throne with flaming wheels of fire. You can keep your 4x4 off-roaders. This is the vehicle you want to be in, right? This is power that's out of this world. And that's what's going on here. This is the one who rules over all these things, the season, the stars, the moon, the sun, our lives as well. And he's graciously offered us his friendship, covenants. He wants to bring us into relationship. And so that's what it's all about. It's about looking beyond all this stuff to the God who is there. And that's why over top of all these images of the synagogues, images of the stars, the planets, all that stuff in the zodiac, right above it, the Ark of the Covenant, the very presence of God. So there's a theological lesson here. I think Walter Zanger is onto something with this, and that helped to solve a mystery for me because I heard about this years ago, and I always wondered what it meant. So hopefully that was enlightening to you. This is the K.O. Clark Show, 888-914-9149. Be right back. The Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio's line, is hiring today. Several positions are available throughout the United States. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. to learn more about how you can find your vocation with Catholic Order of Foresters, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, welcome back to the program. Get your calls in just a second, 888-914-9149. Something I wanted to tell you yesterday, but we ran out of time. I wanted to get to it today. How do you lock down your phone to keep your personal data from being leaked? This is a real danger. I'm going to give you some pointers on how to do this. And it's important. Maybe you guys are into TikTok. I'm not a TikToker. I'm not into SnapFace and InstaChat, as Coach Bill Belichick used to say, with a tongue planted firmly in cheek. Well, I don't know if you remember, but President Trump was always of the mind that the United States should ban TikTok. And he apparently had some good reason for believing this. In fact, I was reading just the other day, CNBC had an article that one of the FCC commissioners, Brendan Carr, actually shared a letter that he wrote to the CEO of Apple and also the CEO of Alphabet. Now, you might not say, well, what is Alphabet? Well, Google sort of morphed into this sort of holding company called Alphabet, which includes Google. So it's basically Google. And the CEO of Alphabet is Sundar Pichai. So Brendan Carr from the FCC wrote to both of them, both of those CEOs, and said, look, you need to understand that there's some serious info that we have on TikTok. This app is actually not compliant with your app store, and it could be harvesting data from your customers, which is totally against your policies. TikTok, of course, is owned by a company, a Chinese company called ByteDance, B-Y-T-E Dance, and it faced a lot of scrutiny when Donald Trump was in office. And Brendan Carr from the FCC said, if Apple and Alphabet/Google do not remove TikTok from their app stores, they should provide statements to him saying why they're not doing this. Well, this is really interesting. And there's some tweets, actually. Brendan Carr is on Twitter from the FCC. And here's what he said on Twitter. He said, TikTok, and it's a short video app, a lot of funny videos. It's very viral. A lot of people are using this. TikTok, he said, is not just another video app. That's the sheep's clothing. It harvests swaths of sensitive data that new reports show are being accessed in Beijing. I've called on Apple and Google to remove TikTok from their app stores for its pattern of surreptitious data practices. And you can actually follow Brendan Carr at Brendan Carr, C-A-R-R, FCC, at Brendan Carr, FCC. And you can check out the letter that he wrote to Apple and Google. And so anyways, that's just one of the many dangers that are lurking in the apps on your phone. And so, well, how do you lock it down? How do you make sure that no more data is leaked than there needs to be? Hopefully none. Well, Nicole Nguyen from the Wall Street Journal, a tech reporter there, a personal tech reporter, she's really, really good. She wrote a little piece about this in the Wall Street Journal not too long ago, just a few days ago. And she points out that it's a little bit different. Like when you're using apps on your phone, it's a little bit different from, say going on the internet on your computer a little bit, because your phone has a lot of different stuff in it. Sensors like GPS, cameras, all kinds of other stuff. Health apps. A lot of people have health apps on their phone tracking a lot of information about them. And so she interviewed a professor from the University of Oxford, a privacy researcher named Carissa Velez, and she said, it's good to have as few apps as possible because every app could potentially be a privacy threat. So that's point number one. So Nicole Nguyen gave basically 4 points on how to kind of clean up your phone. It's a good thing to do this summer. Maybe you've got some extra time to do it. Number one, perform an audit of all the apps on your phone. You actually should get rid of some of the apps on your phone. There are apps that you're not using. You should probably delete those. Apps that are free, understand something. Here's a general rule of thumb. If a service is free, if an app is free, understand that if it's free to use for you, that means that you are the product, okay? How are they making money? You got to think about this. What's their business model? If something is free, like Facebook or something, they're basically selling the data that you provide them. Every time you post something, you're providing them with information about you, and they're selling that data to third parties, to advertisers. That's how they make their money. So you need to understand that. And a lot of other apps are also looking at your data as something that they can harvest. So check out, just think about what is the business model? How are they doing it? How are they getting by? How are they paying their employees? You can usually put two and two together. So you can delete the app from your phone. If you have an iPhone, how do you delete it? You press the icon, you long press it, it'll start to jiggle, and then you just select remove app. If your app is not on your home screen, if it's in your app library, it'll say delete app. Okay, so just do that. And then you can do it if you have an Android device, you can do it through the Play Store. You go to manage apps and devices, then go to manage, tap the app that you want to delete, and then select uninstall. I'll also provide a link to this article, so in case you don't remember these points. The second thing you need to do is review the access to data. All the apps have what are called app permissions. And the app sometimes has access to all kinds of things that it really shouldn't. Like, for example, there are flashlight apps that have access to your contact list. Why on earth does it need the email addresses of all your friends? They're obviously trying to harvest your data. So look at your app permissions. You can always change them later. Don't give them any more permissions than what they need to actually operate. You can always fix that later. Location apps, by the way. Location services is something that a lot of apps use on your phone. That's highly sensitive data. They can basically piece together where you've been using GPS. They can track you all throughout your day, wherever you go, whatever you're doing. They can figure it out. It's actually kind of frightening. So location history is something you should maybe look at. And only allow that to apps that need it. Like, for example, if you're using Google Maps. And you can also, by the way, adjust it so that it's only using your location when you're actually using the app itself. So app permissions are important. Also, ad tracking. On the iPhone, you can go to the privacy section in settings and look at tracking. And you can figure out there what apps are tracking you in what ways. And you can play with that. You can adjust that. You can also do that through Android and Chrome. Using the Chrome browser. And so lock down your browser as well when you're looking at the internet. Safari is a great browser to use on the iPhone. It's a sort of native browser, and it does a great job at preventing cross-site tracking because a lot of websites want to track you when you go to the next website. Say you're shopping for something, and then you go to the Relevant Radio app. Oh, this person listens to Relevant Radio. How interesting. Well, cool. Maybe you want to advertise that. Hey, let's spread the word. But maybe you don't want people to know what you're looking at and getting more info from you. So anyways, we'll post a link to that article as well. It's important for you to know. Let's go to the phones right now. Joe is calling from Passaic, New Jersey. Hi, Joe.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm well.
Thank you. for leading me on the right path to the Franciscan Friars in Paterson, New Jersey. They got me on the right road. Anyway, the reason is when people ask me what sign I was born under, I always tell them I was born under the sign of the cross.
And then they look. I love it.
They go, huh? The Lord Jesus Christ, he's the only sign.
So, thanks for that, Joe. That's a great line. That's a great line. Hey, what's your sign? I was born under the sign of the cross. Earlier in the show, in case you missed it, we were talking about the zodiac. Some images of the zodiac, the horoscope, were found on the floors of ancient Jewish synagogues. Was this a pagan thing? Not necessarily. But we did sort of run through church teaching on this and why it's wrong, and ultimately it's demonic in origin, according to the church fathers. So if you missed that part of the show, definitely check the podcast. You're going to want to go to relevantradio.com, go to the show page, The K.O. Clark Show. You can access that. You can access all of our back episodes, as well as the Faith Explained show. We're going through, speaking of pagans, going through the book of Jonah right now. Jonah had to preach to the Ninevites. He didn't want to go there. He wanted God to nuke these guys, but God said, no, 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 give them a chance to repent. And they did. Kind of shocked Jonah, but people do respond to the message. That's why we do what we do here at Relevant Radio. So definitely check the podcast for all those shows. You can also get them through the Relevant Radio app too. And tell a friend about all of our great programming on Relevant Radio. Hey, speaking of that, trending is coming up next. Brooke Taylor is sitting in for Timory. Father Jeffrey Kirby will be on the show. And also she's going to have a Catholic rapper called Enoch, like the Book of Enoch, but it's Enoch, K-N-O-C-K. Ha ha ha. Yeah, he'll bust a few rhymes for you, maybe. Check it out. Jim Shaper produced the K.O. Clark Show today. Patrick Aylock took your phone calls. See you tomorrow. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my dad.